The story, this parable of the prodigal son, I think is one of the most compelling stories that Jesus told, and one of the most challenging stories for us to really take to our hearts. As I listened to it being read, and as I read it myself this week, it occurred to me how easily this particular parable lays itself, opens itself up to become a play, to think of it as a play. It's easily made into a play in two acts, a two-act play. I mean, there's no more than two characters on the stage at any one time. There's dialogue, there's feeling, it has it all. And perhaps the title of this play, I think, would be Reckless Extravagance. And if we were all directors of this play, the way it would begin, perhaps you have ideas of your own. I mean, if we were watching it on TV, you know, we see in big letters, Reckless Extravagance, and there would be music behind, you know, and I think the music would softly be Amazing Grace by a solo violinist, and we would hear a very soothing voice start off with, "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near him to listen. And the Pharisees and scribes were grumbling and saying, 'This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" And we would think, quickly think, tax collectors and sinners, scribes and Pharisees. You know, the tax collectors weren't just like the IRS. The tax collectors in Jesus' time were often Jews who were in collusion with the Romans, who were oppressing the Jews. And they were in collusion with the Romans to make money. So they weren't liked at all. And the sinners were people way on the margins of the society of the day. So we have the tax collectors and sinners, and then we have the righteous people, the people who are following the law, the people whom Jesus really addressed a lot, the Pharisees and the scribes. So we have his audience was very, very mixed for these three parables. So he's directing these three stories with one theme. Obviously, he was hammering the point to this audience. Now, you know, let's understand the opening lines of this play clearly, the opening lines of the younger son. You know, there was a story that I read that Prince Charles was addressed by the media, and he was asked about how he felt about the prospect of his ascending to the throne when Queen Elizabeth died. And his response was, quote, "Gentlemen, you're speaking about the death of my mother." And he refused to answer. So when this younger son says to the father, "Give me a share of the property that will belong to me," that wasn't a like, "Give me my allowance." This was said with hate. I mean, this was hateful. This is like saying to the father, "I wish you were dead. I want my stuff. I don't want you. I cannot wait for you to die." That's what that means. Give me my share. So it's not giving my share of the property. It's give me my share of the property. And it was spoken with all the hate that we can imagine. Now, the typical Palestinian dad, what would have been tradition, would have chased the kid out of the house, perhaps violently. And that didn't happen. And when the townspeople, the neighbors, would have heard what this father did, he would have lost all face. You know what losing face? His whole reputation, everything would have gone down the tubes because he didn't act like a father should act. He gave the son what the son wanted. So then in the next scene in this play, we see the sun goes away. We see there are parties. There is a lot of riotous living. And then we notice that he gets hungry, and he's with the pigs. Now, the Jews in the audience that day that would have seen this son with the pigs, I mean, that's not Jewish, you know. That's like he was becoming a Gentile. He was away. He had broken with the covenant. The audience's anger at that boy would have really heightened at that point. And then he's eating pods, probably carob pods, which were only eaten by the animals and by people that were very, very poor. And he's not welcome where he is. So life is hard, and the boy is hungry, and he practices a return speech of sorrow, seeking forgiveness, and he comes back, but his regret, his coming back, is not really heartfelt. It's more stomach-driven. You know, he's sorry, but he's not really that sorry. Because if you paid attention, the speech that he prepared while he was away had in it a phrase, treat me as you would your hired hands. And when he got to the father, he eliminates that phrase. So the boy is sorry, but it's not an all-embracive, all-compelling sorrow. So when he comes back, the father, who probably had been looking for his son every day, runs. Now, women run in Jesus' time. Children run. Slaves run. Masters of the house don't run. When I was a child, I was the child of an ardent father. And I could imagine the heat of that father's embrace that was led up to by this yearning run. I could imagine it. I could imagine the unseemly speed of the father who just couldn't wait to see the child. I could feel the warmth of the father's ardent arms. I know the boy's safety. I know the boy's sense of relief. If the boy's sorrow wasn't complete before, at the embrace of such love, he learned remorse. He learned the pain of love. He shared in the father's heart. So the father says, "Get my best robe." He doesn't wait for the kid to clean up even. He gives him the robe, he gives him the ring, he gives him everything. And perhaps the first act of our play could end with the father's words, "I love you, I welcome you." A very, very powerful first act. But there's more. Act two, the other child. More music. Perhaps still Amazing Grace, but this time with two violins, perhaps with the melodic lines intertwining. I don't think she could do that over here or wherever she is. Two melodic lines intertwining. Now remember, the older brother, the older son, hears the festivity going on, and he learns what happened. Now remember, this younger kid left with no thought about how much work his brother had to do. No thought about what his recklessness caused the house, caused the brother, what the loss of property meant to their livelihood. So I would say, you know, the older brother has cause. And he worked hard. I think his demeanor would show an understandable, just welcome. I think he could have welcomed his brother. but perhaps not to a fatted calf. You know, maybe more to bread and water, and not to that robe. Maybe more to a sackcloth, you know, and not to a new ring, maybe ashes, and not to merriment, maybe some tears. And the dancing? Why not make my brother kneel? I mean, that would really seem fair, don't you think? I mean, really? I mean, you know, and then the father, I mean, lays it on. He invites the whole town and the whole community in to celebrate that this younger son came home. The height of celebration. The oldest son. How dare you use your money that we earned like this? I have some rights. What if I earned for good behavior? Not even a goat, certainly not a party. And then with what's usually a child's first ethical statement, it's not fair. And you know, the oldest son calls his father out of the party and almost is as insulting as the younger son when he says to the father, "Listen!" He doesn't even say, you know, in those days they learned politeness. It would be "Father, listen." He just says, "Listen." And the father looks at the son and says, "My child, everything I have is yours. Come to the party." I think if I were a director or a screenwriter, I would end the play right there. I would end the movie right there. And everybody would be upset because there was no resolution. Everything I have is yours. Come to the party. So what happened? What's going through your mind? You know, I remember when I was a child in grammar school, and I went to a Catholic grammar school, so we learned these stories. And I wasn't even aware of an older son, ever. I remembered, you know, as I thought about this and reminisced, I remembered that I always saw that younger son kneeling at the father's feet. And it was probably the Rembrandt painting that the teacher held, because I remember very clearly that his shoe, his sandal, he was off on one foot, because as a kid you would notice that. And I remembered also, because I play piano and I'm very aware of hands, even now, I remember that the hands on the boy's shoulders, one was very slight and one was very strong. It was definitely a feminine hand and a masculine hand. So Rembrandt was making a statement about the that God is beyond all gender. But, you know, I remember that painting, and I remember wanting as a kid to be that son kneeling. And I remember feeling, you know, how sorry I was for the little things that I did as a kid. You know, nothing was big, you know, little things, unkindness or not doing my homework or not quite telling the truth or that kind of thing, or not sitting with the child that nobody else wanted to sit with because I wanted to be in with the group. And I remember all of those things, but I thought, as we mature, all of us, I think we identify with the older brother because we've lived through it's not fair. But then I wondered even more. I wondered if our shift in focus from the younger son to the older son, if we haven't lost something. I mean, is it wisdom? Is it better to feel angry rather than vulnerable? Was I wiser as a child knowing how to kneel before God and say I'm sorry and allowing myself to feel this love with my childlike heart? I mean, have we in our maturity forgotten how to be humble and honest and vulnerable? Have we, God's good people, forgotten that we too are lost? I mean, I felt sad. I felt sad. You know, I pastored a church for years, and every year around this time, I used to feel extremely sad because I knew that when I had the Holy Week services, there would be a handful of people, and on Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, the church would be filled. And I used to say, I mean, should we have Palm Saturday and Easter Sunday and forget all the time in the middle? So who are we, you know, maybe in our identification with the older son, we're missing one of the pillars of our faith. So what is really the thread holding all of this together? We can identify in our prayer life with the older son, with the younger son, etc. But Jesus's theme, he starts out, a father had two sons. What's the subject? Father. The theme is God's love. God's love. And God's love is grace. And that's offense, because God loves the people who are here and the people who are not here the same. God loves the Jew and the Gentile, the Muslim and the Christian, the publican and the Pharisee, the saint and the sinner, the Republican or the Democrat, the same. And it's us who make these divisions, who think in our minds this and that, and it makes us rigid and small, and it makes our hearts hard. It makes us nameless, stark understudies like the elder son, rather than joyful, forgiven sinners. So we have a challenge as we go forth. You know, the one of the last phrases in the gospel is the Father saying to us, everything I have is yours. Paul talks about it as the free gift of grace. Everything I have is yours. God is not hiding out, making it difficult for us to reach God. God is looking for you. You are the one who's hiding. Can you discover God's joy in coming home? Can you be less anguished? Can you be less anguished and more troubled? Everything I have is yours. Can you accept the fact that you, as you are worth looking for? I mean, do you really believe that God has a desire to simply be with you? We hear Jesus say, everything I have is yours. Maybe it's the word everything that makes us uncomfortable, because, you know, if we receive a big gift, think about it. If somebody gives you a big gift, you always feel, oh, you got to give something back. So maybe it's the everything, in honesty. Maybe it's God saying, everything I have, and we really say, you know, it makes us nervous and we are afraid to accept that gift for whatever reason in our hearts. But I think, you know, this Lent, if you do nothing else, if we do nothing else, if we can accept that we are very much like the older son, sure, but like the younger son also. Denise Levitoff had a very short reflection, I think, that fits this parable clearly. And these are her words. I do nothing. I give you nothing. Yet you hold me minute by minute from falling. Lord, It's you who provide. May it be so.